Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of 7-Minute Scaling Secrets, where we interview entrepreneurs and learn a secret on how they scaled up their businesses. Today we have a special guest, Ling Fen Ru, who is a passionate entrepreneur who's running Turtle Tree. Fen Ru, tell us a little bit more. What does Turtle Tree do? This episode was brought to you by Superscaling. Join the Superscaling Ignite program today and learn how you can systemize and superscale your business so that your revenues can grow to at least $100,000 a month with a productive team from all over the world, raving fans as clients, and happy founders who have true freedom. Visit superscaling.com/ignite today. And now, back to the episode.
So we are a biotech startup, and we have the ability to produce milk and milk ingredients without the animal. So you can imagine, it's not like plant-based milks. Plant-based milks are trying to get oat or almond to taste like milk. For us, we're able to use biotech to produce the actual animal analogs of real milk. So today we are in Singapore, Boston, and California.
Wow. That is incredible, because I remember as a kid wondering, you know, why we have to actually eat food, like eat real food. Like, one of the things that I always think about is like, why can't we just have like, you know, food that's like made, right? You see sci-fi movies where everything comes in a pill or a liquid, and you can just have all the nutrients that you want from those things. And I think what you're doing is literally like going down that path. How do you start though? Like, how does one like you get into a field like Turtle Tree? Like, what was the main motivation? Were you always wanting to be a biotech entrepreneur?
So maybe, no, not that way, but maybe a bit about my background. I've always been working in tech, used to work for tech companies, Salesforce, Google, but always on the business side. So in about 4 or 5 years ago, I actually was learning how to make cheese as a hobby. So that was quite fanatic. I went up to Vermont, north of New York, for a couple of weeks to learn how to make cheese. And I wanted to replicate this whole process back in Asia. But obviously in Singapore, there are no cows. I went up to Indonesia, to Thailand, trying to look for sources of raw fresh milk. But in this whole journey, there were a lot of problems with contract farming, with hormones and antibiotics that are being pumped into the cows. So as a result, the milk quality is not as good. The mozzarella wouldn't stretch. There is not enough calcium in the milk. So I gave up that whole idea. So back then, I was still working for Google here in Singapore. And that's how I met my co-founder, Max. He was in my office on stage talking about different transformative technologies. Back then, he just exited his old tech company that he was running for the past 15 years. And he was on stage talking about different transformative technologies like Memphis Meats or Blue Nalu. So these are companies, I mean, this is 4 or 5 years ago, they're trailblazers. They were able to make meat and seafood without the animal. They do that by culturing samples of the cells and growing them into large quantities, pressing them into patties and serving them as real meat. So that really blew my mind. I couldn't believe you can access meat without the animal. So we started to talk about using similar methods to make milk. And in 2019, we put in some scientists, we did a lot of research and made some breakthroughs, and that's when we filed our first patents and started the company.
Wow. Of all the different fields of biotech, why milk specifically? I mean, I understand the cheese hobby, cheese making hobby that you had, but why not the cow itself, where we look at meat? Why the milk instead though?
If you look at the dairy industry, it's $720 billion. It's larger than beef, chicken, and poultry combined. Oh. It's actually the largest food segment in the world. You don't realize it, but we have so many touch points with dairy. It's in your emulsifiers, it's in your milk, in your coffee. It's in so many different pastry products. So we have so much touch points with milk. So the size of the impact is actually massive. And not to mention, if we're able to do this, we can produce milk more sustainably. There is less greenhouse gases emitted. There is less animal cruelty. And the first products that we're targeting are these better for you ingredients that are better for human health as well. So overall, it's just better for humanity, better for health.
Wow. I love that. How is that coming along? Like can we get Turtle Tree like milk already? Is that something that can be tried? Can people go to the supermarket, right, and get some?
So that's a good question. We are in the scaling up stage at the moment. We are looking at FDA and Singapore Food Agency approval by the middle of next year. So following that, we work on a B2B2C model. We will partner up with the big CPG food companies, the big beverage companies, to introduce our products into the end products, the end consumer products.
So, Turtle Tree milk is going to be indistinguishable from regular dairy. It tastes the same, looks the same, smells the same, acts the same.
That's right. It's going to perform the same way. It's going to have the same functional benefits. And we are more of a B2B to C model. So it's more like Intel Inside. So when people make a conscious choice to choose a computer, they can specifically choose for certain Intel products within that computer. We imagine Turtle Tree products to be the same way. People want to be able to choose that Turtle Tree Inside product because it shows that it's better for the environment and better for their own health.
Yeah, for sure. That means this product won't have problems of lactose, right?
So if we introduce these ingredients into a plant-based milk or into a yogurt, the lactose can already be pulled out from the upstream process.
Oh, nice. That's good things for lactose intolerant people, which I am also, by the way.
Oh,
So yeah, that's fantastic.
that is a pain.
Yeah. Oh. How do you even like find the ability to do this? Like as a person, do you just wake up one day and say, you know what, that's something that I want to solve, and you immediately know who to approach, what to do, the technologies that are required, the expertise that you need? How does one even start like a business like this?
So that's a good question. I think a lot of it is it's confidence in how my co-founder and I execute. So when we first met, I gotta give you a bit of background about Max. He has a lot of experience being an entrepreneur. And I think one thing different about Max is when he has an idea, he starts executing on it. A lot of people have great ideas, but they just talk about it. But he will start reaching out to people on LinkedIn. He will start talking to his friends. He would reach out to his own doctor, his own network to bounce the idea. Does this make sense? So I think in the early days when we had this whole milk idea, it was fun. We spoke to people from Terra, the Nestle Danones of the world. So initially we were very gung-ho. We're like, okay, we're gonna make milk. Milk is such a complex fluid. There is 2,000 different ingredients in milk. We're gonna make full milk. So we spoke to Fonterra, and the chief scientist said, well, full milk is at $2 a gallon. Do you think you can use biotech to get to that kind of price point? So over time, we refine the idea. We focus in on certain areas, which is why we are focused on that specific protein that I was talking about called lactoferrin. Lactoferrin trades on the market between $500 to $3,000 per kg. So
Wow.
you can imagine this price point versus $2 a gallon. This
Yeah.
is where you want to get to. So I think back to your point, it's really starting to talk to people, as many people as possible, starting to execute on some of these ideas. And door that opened gave me more confidence that this could possibly work. And I think building a strong team behind us was crucial as well.
I see. You guys have to be funded, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we've raised about 40 million so far over the past couple of rounds. And some of our investors include Prince Khalid from KBW. We have Artesian, which is Australia's pension fund. We have Verso Capital out of Switzerland and Dubai and a host of others. And yeah, we're very fortunate to have very strong backers.
Wow, that's quite a global mix. Who was the first though? How do you get your first amount that was necessary to start hiring the team, to start like investing into your hardware and laboratory equipment? How did that come about?
Sure. So when we first started, Max and I bootstrapped for a couple of months first and filed our first patents before we started fundraising. I think both of us wanted to maintain some sort of autonomy on what to build, before we brought in investors, but I'm forever thankful to my first investor. He and his wife, Nate Salpeter from Sweet Farms. They truly believed in Max and I. I think in the early days, it's all about investing in the founder. You know, Elvin, I think the first idea, the first product is so different than what we have today. So it's about investing in the team. So he really saw that in us, and I'm so thankful that he opened up his network to us as well on top of his first check. So yeah, fast forward to today, we hope to continue growing the company in a way that Max and I envision it to be.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys will. And tell us a little bit more about the startup phase. You said that you were bootstrapped. With the bootstrap funds, what do you first invest in? What was it? Was it to build a team? Was that for the laboratory equipment that was necessary? Or what was the investment in?
Yeah, absolutely. So the team is first. And I think on the lab side, we were very fortunate. We could just plug and play into one of the accelerator space provided by A-Star. It's called A-Star Central. So it was very good. We could just hit the ground running with that equipment. Now, one really big thing that we did right, and I'm very thankful for that, is as hire number four, we brought in our HR VP. I think human resources is something that I cannot reemphasize how important that is. So Fiona is now our chief people officer, but she has been instrumental in building a very professional image for very senior hires that we've been able to bring on board. Because of her, we've got people with 10, 20 years of experience in companies like Thermo Fisher, Merck, KGaA, Mead Johnson. People, these senior folks, they don't want to come in and just talk to a founder and like, there's no system, there's no HR. So we were able to build a very professional image to attract talent and also retain talent by bringing on Fiona.
Wow. Okay, as a founder, I think that's quite cool because typically in a business life cycle, the HR or the people person doesn't come in until a bit later. What was the main decisions that or the main considerations that you guys had in order to have the fourth person be a HR or a people person?
I mean, I came from places like Google, Salesforce. These are very well-structured organizations.
Yeah.
And my own experience with these organizations, I mean, the first engagement is always the HR team.
Right.
And my decision is very much pivoted around that.
I see.
But I sort of translate that to my own company.
That's great. I think creating that image, having that vision, having the structures and processes and even the documentations in place that help create not just a professional image, but an image of a business that's actually there to create an impact. I think that is what's required to attract not just team members, but also our customers. And yeah, I love the fact that you invested in a HR person or the people side of the business such so early in the business. And you mentioned a lot of highs, right? There are a lot of like great stuff that's happening in terms of your investors, investments, people that you hired. What are some of the low points in your business if you are able to share some?
Yeah, I remember like early days when Max and I were fundraising. I remember one investor meeting. We were in LA and we spoke to this investor and talked to him about what we're doing. And he's like, well, both of you have a business background. What business do you have running a biotech startup? You know what? I'll invest in you once you have a Nobel laureate on your team.
What?
That's just rude. That was just rude. So I think fast forward to today, I understand the value of having a business mind to run a business. I think running a business is not just about the product or the science. It's about legal, it's about regulatory, it's about the people. It's about all of these different aspects, sales, marketing. And as the business leader, your role is to be able to connect the dots and have an overview of everything and also the fundraise. So if I were focused on one area of work, in a study for my past 20 years of postdoc life, I think it would be a little bit more difficult to have that overall view. There are PhDs who are very successful in that as well, but you do need to have that mindset. So it was a little bit unfair for that investor to have said that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think business management is one of the key things that are necessary for a business. Like most of the time when I speak to my clients also, like, yeah, you know, the business might be in whatever, right? It might be in finance, education, or whatever it is, but you know, that isn't necessarily the core skill set that the founder needs to bring. The founder or the founding team needs to really be business people as well, because essentially what you're doing is creating a business. And that is a huge skill set and capability in itself. Tell us a little bit more though. Like you mentioned that both you and your co-founder Max are business people. How do you divide the tasks and responsibilities between yourselves?
Sure. So Max is American. So he has a lot of amazing ideas, and he takes point on setting the pace on how we grow, what the next steps are. For me, I'm Singaporean, and I came from like tech companies, so I'm very structured. I know how to build systems. I know what systems look like. I'm very organized. I have zero inbox policy, and so I think we complement each other very well. I let him set the direction of the company, and I work with the teams to help execute.
Wow. Are there official titles for the both of you?
Yeah. So I'm the chief executive. He's the chief strategist.
Wow. Yeah, well, the chief strategist is a pretty uncommon title.
Yeah.
Why is there a COO in a company?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of the OO stuff is really done by Fiona, my chief people officer. And so Fiona really leads by example. She knows she's hired to do an HR job, but it's not like she's working in a box. We really try to hire generalists who are able to help out in different areas. So she came in as HR, but she's doing finance for a while. She's been doing operations for a while. I mean, as a team of 20 back in the day, we have to wear a lot of different hats. But
yeah,
fast forward to today, we've got a CFO who just came in. We've got new people coming to take these off the hands and just be experts in those areas.
Wow. How big is the team right now?
We have about 50 across the three locations.
And how often does everybody meet? Is there like a town hall, or is there like an all hands meeting that you guys have?
Yeah, we have the Turtle Treehouse meeting every month. So that's always fun. We get one of the some of the teams to share what they've been working on, and also some fun stuff. We actually have a very strong brand team. So internal branding is also very important because people want to feel proud for the company that they're working for. So yeah, Joan, Lawrence, Sandy, Sean, they've been doing a great job around that.
How do you have an all-hands meeting with a global team like that? How do you choose a time zone?
Well, some people have to sleep a little bit later. Some people wake up a little bit earlier. And we even have a couple of guys in the UK, so we'll record the meeting for them.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I guess 3 a.m. is a little bit too late.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Cool. Okay. So we have two questions, standard questions that we ask of all podcast guests.
Mm-hmm.
The first question, what is the most important habit to be a successful entrepreneur?
I think it'd be very different if you ask Max versus myself. But for me, I think the most important habit is executing, being diligent. I think being consistent in replying to your customers, being consistent with one-on-ones with your team is what's going to keep you updated on what's going on. And I think talking to as many people as possible is really important as well. You cannot possibly do things in the silos. Always speak to your customers. Always try to understand if this is what they want, if this is what they think they can sell to their customers. So yeah, that's my two cents worth.
Man, I love that. Like, I don't think enough. It boggles the mind, right? Like, it makes complete sense that if you are running a business, then you should speak to your customer. The most you should speak to the customer, the deepest you should understand them completely. But sometimes that connection isn't there, and founders don't spend enough time with the customer. Second question that we have, what advice would you give to another business owner?
Yeah, I think it's speaking to as many people as possible. Speak to your customers as well. And I think one point I always like to share is I do spend some time in on my Saturdays and Sundays chatting with new founders or people who want to join the biotech space or anything at all. So I'm very active on LinkedIn, happy to set up a time to chit chat for a couple of minutes over the weekend too.
Awesome. And that brings us to our last question, which is, how best can people reach out to Feng Ru and of course Turtle Tree?
Sure. So Turtle Tree, we have a website, turtletree.com. And for myself, I'm very active on LinkedIn. Just search me up and we can start chatting.
All right, that's Lin Feng Ru on LinkedIn. We'll have the link to both Feng Ru's socials as well as Turtle Tree's website in the show notes down below so that you guys can go check it out. Thank you everybody for listening in to yet another episode of 7 Minute Scaling Secrets. Thanks so much Feng Ru for being here. I appreciate all of you. If you guys like this episode, please remember to like, comment, share, subscribe. And I look forward to speaking with you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.